Very good. So I am Steve Rodney from South Carolina. I am going to talk to you about turning gravitationally lensed supernovae into cosmological tools. This is a talk that is mostly about the future. We have a sample of exactly two, so we are hoping to grow that in the future. But I'll tell you a little bit about some preliminary results and very nearly forthcoming measurement of H-naught from supernova Restall, which Tommaso previewed earlier. So just as a quick reminder, Tommaso did a great introduction to the time delay cosmography field, but this is reminding you what we are doing here. If you've got a gravitationally lensed, a strongly lensed, multiply imaged transient source, quasars for the holy cow, and we're hoping very soon many strongly lensed supernovae, you watch the multiple images and measure their arrival time, and that time delay is direct, gives you a time delay distance, which is directly inversely proportional to the Hubble constant. So backdrop, that's where we're at. So this is not a measurement of H-naught. I'm not going to be putting a new dot on the diagram today, but I wanted to show you what we are eventually going to get to. So this is the punchline for my talk, is that we will claim that we can get to, from a single well-observed gravitationally lensed supernova, we can deliver a precision that is comparable to what you get from a single lensed quasar. And of course, we don't know where that's going to land, but we're going to have a similar precision. That is meaning both precision on the time delay and on the lens modeling. And I'll highlight that the next talk after the break from Anwar is going to give you a little bit more as to what's coming in the future from the time delay cosmography overall. So a quick review of what I'm going to walk through here. I'm going to start by describing some work that a grad student and I have been doing in South Carolina, building a software toolkit for measuring time delays from supernovae. This is what we call SNTD, and we're leveraging some the advantages that supernovae have. Then I'll spend a bit giving you an update of where things stand with this beautiful multiply imaged supernova Restall. And right about there, I'm going to run out of time, so you will have to ask me about how we're going to find the next gravitationally lensed supernova if you actually want to hear that part of the talk. This is my grad student, Justin Perel. He's the person, not the droid. This is the next few slides. I'm going to tell you about work that Justin has been doing in building a toolkit for measuring time delays. When we started this work, we thought we're going to take the well-established pikes and other methods that have been applied to the quasars, but it turns out supernovae are different enough that we more or less wanted to build it up from scratch. Because we try to run a good shop in South Carolina, it is pip installable. There's a read the docs, so you can skip the paper and go right to that if you just want to get to work playing. This is an example of the really sophisticated time delay analysis that Vivian Bonvin and Malte Tevez and a lot of other people in the Holy Cow collaboration and others have done for quasar time delay measurement. So they're dealing with a situation where they've got, in some cases, a decade or more of observations. Now there's very high cadence observations to shrink the time baseline down a little bit. But it's highly stochastic and unpredictable. So to fit this, they're using very flexible splines. They've got a regularization method. They've got a suite of different techniques to apply here. But for supernovae, we would like to be able to avoid some of the complexity and the uncertainty that's introduced here because we have the advantage that every lensed supernova is going to be having a light curve that is fast, it's simple, and in most cases, it's fairly predictable. This, and by fast, I mean simply that it goes up and comes down in a matter of weeks and months, and it's very simple in that there's not a lot of stochastic variability in here, and predictable in that we have at least good empirical models, in some case that are grounded in understanding of astrophysics, that allows us to tell you what the shape of that light curve and the colors are going to look like. So here's an example of what this software is doing with the SNTD, which I should say stands for supernova time delays. We can measure a time delay even when we don't capture that peak. So this is a critical thing. You find a lens supernova and you trigger your high angular resolution follow-up so that you can resolve the multiple images if they're spaced by just an arc second or two. if you catch that peak, then you've got a very nice lever arm to constrain this. So here I've got a leading image and a trailing image in red. And this is relatively easy, even in the presence of microlensing, which I'm showing down here in the bottom. But with a supernova, if you miss the peak on the first one, you can still get a fairly decent constraint. We found with a lot of simulations here, because once you constrain the shape of the light curve from your trailing image, you can apply that backwards, that knowledge, to constrain the time delay. It's not as good, but it's better than we anticipated. Another important advantage for supernova time delays is that, this is highlighting work from Danny Goldstein, it turns out that type 1a supernova light curves, color curves, are relatively insensitive to microlensing. So this is showing that for the period after explosion, for the first 10 or 20, 30 days maybe, although microlensing can be giving you offsets on the order of a few tenths of a magnitude, those offsets are correlated across bands. And that means that we can use the color curve, and it is insensitive to microlensing. So here's what this looks like with an SNTD fit to simulated data. The color curve of many supernovae, here's a type 1a supernova color curve in rest frame B minus R, it has enough features with time that you can actually measure a time delay without looking at the light curve directly. Just look at the colors. And because there's a feature in the color curve and it is insensitive to microlensing, this gives you a nice check on systematics. The microlensing systematics. And so here's an example of one of the tests that we can do. For example, Justin can simulate a few thousand lens supernovae, varying the microlensing, varying the magnification ratios, doing before peak and after peak measurements. And you can see that these are histograms of the recovered time delay. The truth is at 60 days, so all of these were simulated with a time delay of 60 days. And we're finding a fairly sharp peaks with precision as good as about plus or minus 3 days. And this is for one version of a follow-up campaign with realistic noise, but certainly these are not cheap to do the follow-up. All right, so I'm going to close off there. That was the toolkit that we've built, but we want to build a tool for actual use. So we're going to apply it to 50% of the known strongly lensed supernova sample, which is supernova Restall. So this was mentioned by Tommaso early on. Supernova Restall is this fantastic, unexpected discovery, which is a quadruply imaged supernova lensed by this foreground cluster member galaxy that then had a fifth image labeled SX here, which appeared in another image of the host galaxy. So this guy is lensed by the cluster that it's sitting behind, and then also lensed by this individual galaxy. So early on, and this is those five images again, and showing the full light curve. So this is work that's been led by Pat Kelly, doing lots of follow-up of over many, many months. This is a peculiar supernova. It's a supernova 1987A-like object. So this is a blue supergiant explosion, which means it's got a very long, slow rise to maximum. This is a bit of a disadvantage for the time delays because it's so long and relatively shallow for the peak. However, it means we get to watch it for a long time and get very, very deep HST imaging. This is all of the five light curves just stacked on top of each other before we've corrected for their relative magnifications and time delays. Early on, before we had the complete light curve, I was able to do some measurement of the time delay from just these four images. And what we found was a simple low-order polynomial fit was sufficient to get a very decent time delay between these four. This is not suitable for time delay cosmography. The delays between these guys are on the order of a few days or a couple of weeks, and the precision, even when it's plus or minus 2 days, that's going to be a giant error on your on the Hubble constant, even if you had a lens model that you would believe for a cluster member galaxy on top of a complicated background cluster. So this was never going to get us there. However, with the fifth images, we now believe we can give you an interesting constraint on HNOT. So to do this, we have been applying four independent time delay fitting methods. I'll show you those in just a moment. And then we've been doing a really rigorous program building mock light curves and testing the accuracy and precision. This is the first time that anyone has done this kind of measurement with a rather complex and peculiar supernova. So we're carefully doing this to define a weight so we can combine all of these methods together using weights that are defined image by image, meaning the performance of a method on image S1 and image S4 are treated differently when we put the weights together to get a final composite time delay. And this is work that Pat Kelly's leading that's in prep. So I'm not going to show you a final answer, but I'll show you a quick sketch of the methods we're applying here. So Pat Kelly has done something similar to what we did in 2016, which is a piecewise polynomial. Here you're seeing the Restall in the background, where now all the light curves, this is flux versus time, have been shifted by a correction for magnification and time delay. You got a nice, clean, piecewise polynomial. And for comparison, here's a set of other supernova 1987A-like light curves. So these guys are other objects that are also at relatively simple, slow peaks because they are also blue supergiant explosions. The second method, we have Vivian Donvin, who has been applying the Pike's method, which is used for the quasar time delays, and just slapping it down and treating our supernova as if it was a quasar. So here is a fit. You can see this doesn't really look like a supernova light curve. It's a very flexible model, which is very appropriate for quasars, but Vivian's been working hard to try and make sure that it's not overly flexible in this instance. One of the real advantages of his method is he's got a very rigorous approach to dealing with the microlensing. It's something they thought a lot about for the holy cow time delays. And the most important part is this region near peak, where you really get a constraint on the time delay. We have an interesting new approach that Casey Mandel and student Stephen Thorpe have applied, which is using Gaussian processes of regression here. And so this is their resolved light curves here. And then finally, the SNTD, which I already told you about. A challenge here, we don't really get the full leverage that SNTD has to offer, because we'd really like to have a nice, well-behaved supernova so that we can take the power of a well-established template for the light curve. If we know a lot about the spectrum and the colors and the shape of the light curve, we could probably do better. This is a parameterized model because we don't have an existing library of templates for supernova 87A-like objects. But here is Justin's fit using SNTD, using the Bazan parameterized model. Okay, so we take all of these, we throw a whole bunch of simulated data based on other 87A-like supernovae that we've mocked up to look like the Restall observations. We do some bootstrap resampling. We define weights for each of these, and we've got everything blinded, so all of our light curve fitters don't know what the true time delay and magnifications are. And here's what we get when we compare these models against each other. Four very different models, and this is showing the image S2 minus S1, so these are two of the first four. And this is showing the estimated minus true. So this is after subtracting off the true time delay that's been built into the simulated data. And the takeaway here, on a log scale on the y-axis, everything agrees quite well. There's some interesting features, different structures to the light curves. We're glad that we've got four and not just one. But the overall agreement, and you can see the numbers here and the standard deviations for these fits, we look quite good and in good agreement, no major systematic biases. And here is the most important one, which is where we have the most leverage for time delay cosmography, which is SX, that fifth image, the one that came a year later and has a wider separation, and so it gives you more of a lever arm because of the long time delay. This one also, very good agreement, and in fact, maybe even better in terms of the lack of features and systematics in the different methods. We take all of those, we have a overly complex weighting scheme to combine them all together, and here is an example. This is S2 minus S1, and this is the composite time delay plus uncertainty, no longer on a log scale here. This is blinded, so that number is meaningless. This one is approximately final, don't take it to the bank, but something similar to this is going to be in the published paper coming up. And it's quite similar to what we got in the first round of this back in 2016. So we're confident we can actually measure time delays with plus or minus 2 to 3 days for these kinds of, these first four. But again, the most important one is comparing all of these guys to the fifth image, that SX. So here is SX. So this is, again, we're looking at the time delay where these guys appeared in 2014, 2015, and then this was about a year later. So this, again, is blinded, so that's not a meaningful number. We don't know what the true time delay is, but that will get taken out as we do the final analysis. But this is approximately final. So if you put these together, we've got a precision on the time delay that is on the order of 2%, a little better. Which is much better than I anticipated. I would not have expected, given the peculiarity of the light curve, that long, shallow rise, it looks better than we anticipated. So we're confident that we've got this, and we're pleasantly surprised. So a quick look at what will the final H-naught era budget look like. This is very hazy, hand-wavy, but a best case, we've got a time delay measurement on the order of 2%. The uncertainty in the primary lens model, even for this complex cluster, because there's been an enormous amount of effort put into this, thanks to Tommaso and Claudio Grillo, Masamune Iguri. We've had a whole bunch of lens modeling teams, and we believe that this is going to be a well-constrained, probably the best lens model you can get for a cluster-scale lens. There is some uncertainty due to the mass along the line of sight, line of sight shear effects. The clusters are intrinsically multi-plane, so you don't have the thin lens approximation as clean as you would like. So there is some uncertainty. This is close to zero in this case, but it can be a concern. And then marginalization over the flat lambda CDM parameters. I should have highlighted this earlier. Everything I'm talking about is in the context of flat lambda CDM. So we've got uniform priors on H-naught and omega matter. So it was a good paper from Claudio Grillo, which was laying out basically how good can we do when the final time delays are there. In a worst case scenario, we would be looking at something like this, put it all together, and the total H-naught uncertainty that we can get for supernova Refstall or a similar strongly lensed supernova, we're in the ballpark of 5 to 10% here, which is, I think, a pretty good delivery for the first time out. So, take-home message from Refstall. We are delivering a time delay precision on the order of 2%, and this will get us to a measurement of H-naught with a precision on the order of 7%. And as a reminder, to show you again, this is comparable, competitive with any individual lens quasar. So this is going to get folded in by itself. It doesn't change the game, but it is an interesting new addition, and we hope to have many more of these to come. How am I doing on time? Good, okay. So I will actually spend some time to tell you how we might find the next one. Obviously, we'd like to get a sample that gets beyond the low single digits, and this is going to happen, whether you like it or not. So the question is, you want to find a needle in the haystack. There's two ways to go about this. These are rare events. They're rare because lenses are rare and supernovae are rare, so we've got an order rare squared problem. And there's two ways to go about it. You can do a wide field survey or you can do a targeted search. So the wide field survey, you want to find a needle in a haystack, so go get a bigger haystack. So this is the approach that LSST will do. We expect that these wide field surveys, beginning with ZTF, but really reaching its apex with LSST, is going to find first a handful and then hundreds of strongly lensed supernovae behind lenses that mostly that we don't yet know of. And there's some good work from Danny Goldstein in particular developing how you would optimize this search and how you're going to find these guys. But one thing to keep in mind is the vast majority of these, unfortunately, are not going to be great for time delay cosmography. This is all strongly lensed supernovae, but to do a measurement of for H-naught or eventually for other cosmological parameters, you really want to have large image separations, you want to have long time delays, and so you cut off all of this stuff, and you're left with this bit at the top, where we're looking at image separation in arc seconds and time delay in days over here. So this gets you down to a small fraction on the order of 12%, 20% maybe, depending on exactly where your cuts are, which is still great, and it will still deliver many dozens of good objects for us to deal with. Many of them will look like this guy, which is IPTF 16GEU. This is the second half of our current strongly lensed supernova sample. This was discovered in the IPTF survey, paper by Ariel Gubar. This guy is a quadruply imaged lensed type 1A supernova. So this is the gold thing. This is what we're looking after, is type 1A supernovae are well-behaved, well-understood, and this would be the ideal case, except that this is very close. It was not caught before peak with high-resolution imaging, and so this highlights one of the problems. If you look at a typical ground-based PSF on the order of 0.7 arc seconds, there's going to be an awful lot of blending for these guys. It's really difficult to measure a time delay with this kind of thing. Especially with LSST alone. So you really need wider separation, and there's lots of other reasons to minimize systematics from microlensing, where wide separations and long time delays are really important. So the other option, setting aside the wide field survey, if you want to find a needle, stop looking in haystacks, go look in your sewing kit. So this is the approach that has been laid out very nicely by Yiping Xu and Adam Bolton. We know where a lot of really good strong lenses are. So rather than just look at the wide sky and wait for the lenses to appear, we can target the known lenses. And if you wait long enough, a supernova will explode in one of these. Now you're gonna have to wait an awful long time or survey an awful lot of lenses. So we've been attempting to get this rolling, and we have some ground-based surveys that have been doing this. The trick is you want to pick the most likely lenses to have a supernova explosion. And so here is a plot from Yiping showing the redshift of the background source, so this is the redshift of the lens galaxy, and the star formation rate that has been measured from deep spectroscopy of all these objects. And you can see that as you go out to higher redshift, we are, of course, getting to the higher star formation rates. And these lensed objects have some excessively high star formation rates, on the order of 100 solar masses per year. And so this is the playground you want to get to. So you want to get out to high redshift where you get the boost from this really high star formation rate so that you're more likely to get a supernova in a reasonable span of time. And of course, this is translating that into a core collapse supernova rate. We're still talking about, a tenth of a supernova per year, maybe reaching up towards one supernova per year at the high end. So you still need to observe dozens of these to have a chance to get one 16 GEU or Refstall-like detection. And I should say, I've set aside the galaxy scale lenses here. We will find supernovae lens like supernova Refstall by galaxy scale lenses, but these, by cluster scale lenses. So I've set aside the cluster scale lenses. These guys are all galaxy scale lenses where the lens modeling is much simpler, and that will actually make it easier to get a good time delay cosmography measurement. So I'll highlight one of these guys here. This is Bell's JO8330. This guy has a very wide image separation. We can predict a time delay on the order of 70 days if a supernova was to appear anywhere in this. And you would see two very clean images, a nice clean lens model, and we've already got a lens model in hand to get us started. So this is the kind of thing that we would love to find in the next few years. So a colleague, Ismael Perez-Fornon, has been leading a program with the Liverpool Telescope targeting many of these lens galaxies, and this is an example showing the kind of, with a simulated lens supernova, what we might be able to find. We're only getting to a limiting magnitude of 23.5. You really want to go a magnitude or two deeper to really be efficient. So if anybody's got, a few hundred hours of 10-meter time, or you want to loan me a space telescope, we can find you some beautiful lensed supernovae with HST. All right, so let me skip along through that. And so this is a quick summary of where things stand. So why would we want to use lens supernovae? They do have natural strengths, like this achromatic phase early on that minimizes systematics from microlensing. We've got the toolkit ready to go now. We can do lots of interesting studies to simulate and optimize, but we'd really like to start applying it to more things like supernova Refstall. We expect to have a handful more of these in the next few years, and hundreds as LSST gets going. Eventually, WFIRST will also deliver a really good sample with a higher redshift and ideal for time delay cosmography. And to close out, I will just give you a list of some things that you might do while you're waiting for that next lens supernova. So if you're looking for another homework set for Joe Bovey's class, how can we really use these gravitational lens supernova to reduce the lens model degeneracies? For example, we've got a type 1a supernova. You can measure the luminosity distance using it as a standardizable candle, but we have not really demonstrated the effectiveness of that. I haven't talked about using spectroscopic time delays. We can measure the age of a supernova from its spectral features. Just how well can we expect to do that, and how much does microlensing, for example, get in the way? And then when we have unresolved lens supernovae, when the images are sitting on top of each other, do we have enough sharp features in the end of the plateau phase, for example, to get a time delay from this? And then we need to do a lot more work understanding microlensing for core collapse supernovae. So I've been working with Sean Couch at Michigan State to do some simulations and modeling of microlensing effects from type 2 supernovae that we hope to have give us some better predictions for that. So I think I will close there. Thank you.
Steve, really nice talk. Can you go back to the where you show like the LCST will find 1,000, but then the image separation won't be good enough, so you basically have to chuck. So on the image separation side, is it just impossible to have AO or HST or some kind of follow-up plan? Like, are we just saying that that won't ever happen for these kinds of numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it will happen. You're not going to get, I think, dozens of LSST supernovae, lens supernovae, that are all going to get followed with multi-epic AO. We don't really expect HST to still be kicking, and JWST is not going to be effective for transient follow-up in general because of the high overheads. So definitely with 30-meter telescopes and AO imaging, there's lots of good stuff to be done. So this is not a lost cause, and you can probably beat this down a little bit. But this is basically to say it's not a trivial thing to pick these guys out and get a time delay cosmography from them from LSST alone.
So the number in the good corner is roughly how many?
Okay, it depends on exactly who you ask and exactly how you find them. So there's a good paper from Radek Wojtag and Jens Jorth and Krista Gall that came out earlier that I think was putting the number in the order of 12% of the sample, and over a 10-year survey, LSST is supposed to get, I think I said like 500 was Goldstein's number or something like that. So yeah, we're talking about in the dozens.
Hey, really nice talk. So did you say that the cosmological model sensitivity was, I guess I wasn't appreciative of the fact that it seems like your sensitivity is higher than a lens quasar?
No, unfortunately, I wish we could say that, but the same lens modeling goes into both. And it's the same geometry, the same time delay cosmography. The only slight advantage you have to improve the lens modeling with a supernova is that the supernova eventually fades away. So when you model a lens quasar, you've got this big, whopping, bright quasar in the way. And I think Tommaso mentioned that it's really nice when you've got like a quad lens, but only a double quasar. In our case, the supernovae always will disappear eventually. So you can get a slightly better constraint on the lens model that way. Then maybe if you've got a lens type 1A supernova, you can correct for some degeneracies. There's a mass sheet degeneracy that you could check, validate that you've attended to that. But there's not any unique advantage beyond those.
Cool. And so as far as the 3% number that you had in terms of systematic uncertainty.
Ah, yes.
Is that of similar? I mean, it sounds like it's larger than the holy cow.
No, I think this is comparable. The Holy Cow are doing galaxy scale lenses, and so they probably can push that down to like 2%.
I think there's a miscommunication here between the two of you. I think he's talking about the residual dependency and other cosmological parameters.
Right, the marginalization.
Ah, okay, I apologize, yes. So you're talking about this.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So that is going to be the same. I said this is conservative. I think as you get better constraints from other probes, that marginalization becomes less and less important.
But fundamentally, it's the same.
Yes.
The only difference, I think, it's a little less in our case because he's using very generous priors from omega to zero.
Okay.
We know it's not the case. And then also we have a range of redshifts, and so there's a little bit of leverage.
Gotcha. Yep.
I see. Good. Thank you for translating, Tommaso.
Other questions? I think I have one. So you said you want to have the time delays to be larger than 30 days, and maybe you said it, but is there like an upper limit? Like you don't want them to be larger than something? I mean, is there like, ideally, what's the time delay that optimizes the uncertainties?
Yeah, so I think typically we set the upper limit on like a graduate student's PhD timeline. But galaxy scale lenses, you will almost never get a time delay that is longer than a few hundred days at the outside. So in a cluster scale lens, you could have decades. So a supernova Refstall actually had a precursor image that would have appeared in the mid-90s. And so that's great. I mean, if you can find an image in a cluster scale lens and then come back a decade later and observe it again and measure a nice tight time delay, you get exquisite precision on that. But at some point, you're now limited by the lens modeling uncertainty, so you don't really win. But we would happily take a 100-day time delay to improve the precision. It doesn't get a whole lot better after that.
So in practice, the limiting factor is the amount of time you can observe these things before they set. So 100 days is perfect because if it gets too long, then it goes behind the sun and you get all this kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
Any other question? If not, let's thank Steve, all the speakers. And we will reconvene at 4:00.